888-349-3311 or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Our guest tonight is an American Southern institution named Ralph McGill. His column has appeared in the Atlanta Constitution for more than 39 years. He has been successfully executive editor, editor and publisher, which he now is, of the Atlanta Constitution, which began its second century of continuous publication just this past month. In the course of his career, he has probably influenced Southern popular thought as far as race is concerned more than any other single force. Among his many honors is the 1959 Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing. Mr. McGill will welcome your calls, your questions, and your comments on tonight's subject, the South, race, and tomorrow. On our national telephone number, which is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311 for national calls, or from the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls on 866-5010. Mr. McGill, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm delighted.
Our first question tonight, the Kerner Report warned of an increasing polarization between the black and white communities of this country. Do you see this as also true of the South?
Well, of course it's true. It's true, I think, exactly as the Kerner Report said. But I like to believe, and I hope it isn't out of regional experience, I like to believe that we may have a little less of it here in some areas than the Kerner Report would anticipate. Of course, the Kerner Report, which I thought was an excellent one, incidentally, was of necessity a generalization. It could not specify as to areas. But I do think that wherever there has been an earnest effort to eliminate some of the features which the Kerner Report identified as creating such polarization, that there will be less of it.
Many people have stated that as we look at the race problem in America, that over the next few years that we can look for leadership in the South. What is your feeling about that?
Well, I think this is true. Of course, you must begin somewhere at the top to have any real success. If you have, for example, a long line of governors, such as the state of Mississippi has had, for example, which line of governors has maintained a hostility toward any racial settlements, such as the Kerner Report recommended, or in Alabama, and I am not selecting those states as being totally evil in this respect. We have our own problems here in Georgia, and certainly other states do as well. But nowhere else in the South has there been such a consistent history of neglect and, in my opinion, hostile attitude toward acceptance of the Negro as a responsible citizen as in those two states. So, despite this, there has been progress in those states. It was not too long ago, for example, that Mississippi had riots about the admission of James Meredith to the university. Now there are quite a number of black persons, students, in the university system. In the last football season, there were two Negro students on the college band. Now, I realize that this is simply one little isolated improvement. But nonetheless, it is an improvement in an area which was greatly inflamed and greatly agitated at one time. In Alabama, over 200 Negroes, young black students, in the university system, where just not long ago, former Governor Wallace was standing in the doors, and before that, he was saying, never. And here in Georgia, in 1954, United States Senator Herman Talmadge said that the state would never integrate. We had governors who said that they would never allow it. Then we had an interlude when they did allow it, and when they did not close any of the schools or attempt to do so. Now we have a rather unusual sort of person in Governor Lester Maddox, who's doing very little harm, really, except in publicity and making ridiculous statements and saying preposterous things. But he has not attempted to shut down any of the schools, and actually, while he has put very few black persons in the jobs of high classification or even medium classification, he has, as a matter of fact, added more black persons to the state payroll than previous governors. So you get you don't get a general pattern, and I think it is necessary to sort of comprehend this curious south of ours to understand it. Even with a fellow like Maddox, even he does not dare try to turn back the clock utterly, nor has he, for all of his words, has he acted as have governors in Mississippi and Alabama.
Mr. McGill, we have a number of persons who listen tonight call and would like to talk to you, but I'd just like to ask one question before we go to our night call listeners. Is there a difference in the race relations, or I should say the relations between the southern white man and the southern black, as opposed to the northern white and the northern black?
Well, again, sir, I think the danger here is, of speaking in generalities, let me try to put it this way. What has happened, sir, and I have witnessed this happen, as have many southerners, you had this very evil thing called segregation. And it was an evil, and it was a poison. It was an evil which did more than simply separate the races. It literally excluded or separated the black citizen from any of the simple processes of the American system, political system, or social system. Under segregation, black persons were excluded from, especially in the more rural, small town areas, from such simple things as attending a PTA meeting or attending a town meeting to decide whether they would vote for school bonds or bonds to authorize a new waterworks or pave the streets. They were permitted no experience in you might call the American form of responsible citizenship. Also, they were excluded from voting rights, except for very few persons. They were not allowed to participate in voting. I remember when we first began to work here in Atlanta, and you would mention a ballot. A great many of the black persons who had moved into this city, and this would be true of others, not having ever voted, didn't know what a ballot was. So we had to have instructions and slides of ballots and teaching what a ballot was. I don't know if the average American quite comprehends what the evil of segregation was and in how many areas of life it reached. Now, we watched several millions of these people, especially during the pre-Second World War period and then the Korean War, when they were greatly needed in war plants and in all industrial development, in unskilled work or semi-skilled work especially, move out of the South, which was ceasing to be a cotton and tobacco area, move out into the industrial cities, west, north, east, and west. So that what you've had is an export of people whose lives and whose environments have been distorted and tortured by this old evil of segregation. Now this has become a national distribution, a national export. So now, that, I'm sorry to be so long on answering your question, but come back, you asked me more about the South. I think there is, I hope there is, and I believe there is a real possibility that in many areas of the South, not all, many, we will, because of centuries of association, be able to make progress and understanding perhaps better than might be the case in simply a ghetto area of the North. And I don't hope for this, and I think one of the worst things we could do would be to try to set up a comparison between the North and the South and say, we're going to do better than you are, or something like that. This would be a mistake and a harmful thing to do.
Mr. McGill, let's welcome some of our night call listeners, right, as a number of people are already calling. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's the national phone number, area code 212-749-3311. Now, you may call, collect. We welcome your comments and your conversation. Our local telephone number is 866-5010. Tonight, the South, race, and tomorrow, our guest calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Ralph McGill, publisher of the Atlanta Constitution. We'll accept our first call from Toledo, Ohio. Ms. Kozak is listening to Night Call over WCWA. Welcome to Night Call. Welcome to Night Call, Ms. Kozak. Hello? Well, she has left us, I guess. We'll take a local call, sir, this time from Brooklyn, New York. Mr. Alvin Coles is listening to Night Call over WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir. Mr. Coles? We seem to be having... Mr. McGill, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yes, we're having a bit of a problem with our listeners, and as we're trying to clear it up, we'll offer another question as we're getting it together.
Perhaps I talked too long.
No, not at all. Atlanta, Georgia has numerous black legislators. Now, how was this accomplished? Was it accomplished through a new system, or was it accomplished through a more revitalized interest on the parts of blacks as well as the parts of whites? Would you care to expand for us?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to remind all our listeners that things have moved, if we examine them in the light of years, things have moved really very rapidly. It was 1954 when the first school decision was made. I don't think many people keep in mind that it was 1964-65 when the voting rights legislation was enacted and implemented by the Congress of the United States. So that in 1954 you would have I think maybe a half million black persons persons registered in the whole total Cotton South.
Mr. McGill, I'm going to ask you to hold your point right there. We're going to depart for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Ralph McGill after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
The prophet Isaiah says, your cities are burning because there is injustice in your land, and the Lord will not hear you because your hands are full of blood. Now, I will interpret that to say, the United States is on fire, its cities are burning because there's injustice in the land, and the Lord above will not hear the cries of people like Lyndon Baines Johnson because his hands are full of blood.
Stokely Carmichael quotes the Bible in support of militancy. And a National Guard commander says ballots, not bullets, are the best ammunition.
I think you have a tremendous power in the democracy of the ballot box. It's much stronger than bullets. You do have the ballot box, which is far stronger than any sort of suppression.
Night Call, the new nationwide call-in show on vital issues, each weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Ralph McGill about the South, race, and tomorrow. Again, Del Shields.
And Mr. McGill, we're back again, and we finally got our call back from Toledo, Ohio, Ms. Kozak, who was very patient to wait with us. So we'll go to Ms. Kozak and we'll get back to our question about the black legislators in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
Welcome to Night Call, Ms. Kozak.
Thank you. Well,
thank you for waiting.
Thank you. I happen to have an article in front of me that you wrote in 1963 after President Kennedy's assassination called Hate News, New Direction, and which could have been repeated twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
There are advancements. Certainly, there has been since then. More Negroes going to school, Negroes in politics, and so forth. But the general feeling of the people doesn't seem to be changing, but with the riots. Do you feel that the militant leaders, Dick Gregory stated, that actually the country was so sick that the riots were helping? Did you feel this way?
That the riots were helping?
Yes.
Well, certainly, many of the riots were very helpful.
In the sense that it wakes up the American public.
Yes, and in the sense that it focused the need for immediate sort of action. But I think you would agree that we need to clarify riots away from a generality. For example, when Dr. King went into Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. King was accused of creating riots. But actually, he would move in with a demonstration in behalf of some right. Then he or his marchers would be attacked. Then I think the record will show that the Dr. King's people did not fight back. But fighting would break out, and police would bring in fire hoses and police dogs. I'm speaking now of the Birmingham incident in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, do you call this a riot? Now, those sort of things focused attention on a wrong. Then you have things which have happened, shall we say, the Washington, New York, Watts, Rochester, a few others, which were, in a sense, riots in the little more literal sense. But I think here again, the interesting thing is that almost none of these took on the aspect of a race riot. That is to say, they were not directed against white people per se, except in a few little isolated incidents. To be sure, some white persons were attacked, but you had
an almost brotherly, integrated looting in some places, for example. So that these types of riots illustrated quite another thing wrong with society. So I think you had, it's necessary, I think, to differentiate between the simple protest riot and the one which sort of springs up spontaneously out of a rumor or the arrest of some person.
Mr. McGill, may I ask a question, sir?
Yes.
Following most of the riots, there generally has been some kind of increased legislation, or there's been some change in the hearts, or if not the hearts, at least the minds of certain legislatures, and many things have come about for the good. Are we right in assuming that the only way that much of the racial problem can be corrected is through riots?
No, I don't think we should assume that at all. I would hope that by now, sir, that we have realized that these wrongs, these inequities, injustices of long standing do exist, and that they must be remedied or there will be riots. And I'm hopeful here. We are into July now, and we really have had less of the legendary by now sort of hot summer trouble than we anticipated. Of course, it may come yet. I would hope not.
But I hope
we have learned. And then I think it's necessary to learn, and it goes much broader than meeting some immediate need. Now, the immediate need requires immediate attention, but here we're up against something that we now realize, that the long period of segregation, isolation, poverty, have produced a generation, or at least several millions of people and young children, who we speak of being deprived, and that is, in a sense, an accurate word, but who simply have not had the opportunity to advance themselves educationally or to participate in the routine processes of our country, and who are, in a very real sense, handicapped in their opportunities and abilities to be a citizen. Now,
Ms. Kozak, did you have another question?
Sir, the only thing that I was interested in, and of course Mr. McGill didn't let me down, was bringing out the point that it is not a question of black against white. The whole thing stems from the Negro wanting to be noticed. He's really just saying, look at me, I'm human too.
Yes, of course. He says, look at me, you still don't accept me. And one of the problems of segregation or separation extends into the areas we've seen of the black athlete and into our colleges. The Negro gets into colleges, and what happens? Well, he's welcomed, but he too often feels himself a sort of a shut-out person from the fraternity system or the club system, and he finds, not always, but too often, that he's paternalistically treated, and people want to ask him about his problem and so forth, without trying really fully to accept him as a person in the university or in the college. So this is, as I think you've properly said in Toledo there, that this is the great failure.
Ms. Kozak?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. This is NyQuil in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may call to collect. That's our national telephone number. And, of course, we welcome your comments and your conversation on the South, race, and tomorrow. Our guest calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Ralph McGill, publisher of the Atlanta Constitution, and for the New York people, 866-5010. We'll take our next call from Indianapolis, Indiana. Miss Mary Evans is hearing Night Call over WTLC-FM. Welcome to Night Call.
Thank you. Mr. McGill, this may seem trivial to white listeners. I doubt that it will to black listeners. Who's in Atlanta?
Wait, will you speak just a little louder, please?
Certainly. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I think so.
I said this might seem trivial to white listeners. I doubt it will to black listeners. Youth, as they are, to be invisible. But I was in Atlanta recently, stayed at the American Hotel, and noticed there a fairly elaborate display which served to pinpoint for visitors points of interest in the city. It seemed incredible to me, absolutely, that despite the fact that the concentration of black universities and colleges in Atlanta is well known throughout the country, evidently they're still invisible institutions in Atlanta because not a single one of them was even mentioned. Every white college in the city was shown, and places such as the federal prison and all that sort of thing.
Well, of course, I don't know anything about that display. It's obviously some sightseeing bus company.
No, it's American Hotel, not a...
They do it themselves. It's a very stupid thing, then. Let me assure you that the black colleges are well known, and their presence is. Just 2 weeks ago, one of our large banks gave $250,000 to establish a chair of business and finance instruction there. Here's a very real...
Here's one of the real problems. Mr. McGill, at which college?
Well, at the Atlanta University Center, and the students from all of the five member colleges will be able to attend the class, which will be set up by this endowed chair. We presently are having large summer school discussions out there. The art shows are a part of and the musical performances are a part of the city life each year. I'm sorry that this one hotel
No, I understand it's one of your large hotels. Maybe this is a matter for your Chamber of Commerce, then.
Well, it isn't the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce you might be interested to know that there is a Negro businessman who is on the board of the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce.
Well, good. Maybe they can do something about publicizing these institutions.
Well, we'll try to see something about this display. I never heard of it, but I assure you that these colleges, well, we've just... two of them have recently celebrated their centennials, and they are very well known, and their presence is well known.
Mr. McGill, thank you so much for calling us.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was just thinking perhaps there are some people who may not be aware of all of the member colleges in the Atlanta system.
Well, we have five Negro colleges which are associated. They're each autonomous, but they associate themselves to the Atlanta University Center in order that they may avoid duplications of certain facilities so that they will not find it each necessary to try to build up a library, for example. And there's a great cooperation, and
well, those schools are Morehouse, Clarks.
There is Atlanta University, which does graduate work and has a very fine school of social work with some 60-odd in the last year, they had over some 60-odd white students in their school of social work, which is one of their better-known schools at the Atlanta University. Then there is Morehouse, which has a very excellent physics science department, which for some years has been having graduates hired by
IBM, National Cash Register, and other corporations. There is Morris Brown, Clark College, and Spelman College for women. Spelman College has the active interest of the Rockefeller family, and it is named, of course, for the mother of the president's Rockefeller brothers.
Mr. McGill, we'll have to break for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Ralph McGill after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Ralph McGill about the South, race, and tomorrow. Again, Del Shields.
And once again, we'd like to welcome the many stations down the line who join us for the second half hour of Night Call. And calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, is our guest tonight, Mr. Ralph McGill, who is publisher of the Atlanta Constitution, which is about to begin its second century of publishing here in this country. Our area telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Remember, we welcome your calls, collect. And our local telephone number is 866-5010. That's our local telephone number in New York, 866-5010. Mr. McGill, we'll take our next call locally from Mr. Moore, who's calling in from Brooklyn, New York. He's listening to Night Call over WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Mr. McGill.
Yes.
I'd like to ask you, as a journalist, exactly how would you compare the coverage of civil disorders by northern and southern newspapers as satirious as bias and things like that?
As compared with those in the South?
Yes.
Well, sir, I think most of the southern newspapers have pretty well abdicated their responsibility in this period, especially since the 54 United States Supreme Court decision. Now, there are quite a number of excellent exceptions to that, but by and large, in the smaller cities and in the rural areas, and also in some of the capitals, say, like Jackson, Mississippi, there was a period when certainly the newspapers there contributed to the inflammatory situation. This has also been true in some years ago in Montgomery, Alabama. It was certainly true some years ago in Birmingham. Harding Carter in Greenville, Mississippi was a notable exception, his paper. Mm-hmm. There were exceptions around, but in the main, sir, I'm afraid I must in candor say that a majority of the southern newspapers, in my opinion, pretty well abdicated their responsibility. Now, I would say that in a slightly different sense, a majority of the northern newspapers did so, but I think their responsibility was somewhat different. They could have done more of an educational.
Why would you say more educational in the South?
I think they could have done a better educational job, but I would like to say that
it's been a great help to have, say, reporters from the Los Angeles Times, from the New York Times, from a great many other newspapers and magazines in the North come down south. I do not think that their presence as Yankee reporters, as the critics used to say, had a bad effect. On the whole, I think that these people made a very fine contribution to what really was going on, because they printed what a great many of the southern newspapers did not print. So I think that in the a great portion of the American press, in my opinion, and I'm not, don't know how qualified I am to speak, but then, in my opinion, a substantial portion of the American press have failed to do what I consider to have been its duty, and to failed also to live up to its responsibility in this period.
Well, Mr. McGill, do you foresee any change in the immediate future on the parts of the Southern newspapers?
Oh, yes, there's been quite a change. For example, some of the cities I mentioned as having contributed to the most awful and inflammatory violence a few years ago now are doing a much better job. But, sir, I will still have to answer you honestly as I know, and say that in Mississippi and many of the Alabama small cities, and in some of the South Georgia cities and other of the old cotton states, you will still find weekly papers and small dailies which are contributing almost nothing of a constructive nature.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York, The South Race and Tomorrow. That's our discussion tonight. Our guest, Mr. Ralph McGill, publisher of the Atlanta Constitution, calling in from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll take our next call from Tarpon Spring, Florida. Mr. Sendelterry is listening to Night Call over WFLA. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask Mr. Gill, do he think education is helping the Negro in the Deep South?
In certain areas it is, yes, sir. Now, I must say, sir, that in too many rural areas and in too many southern states, there still is resistance.
Well, I live in a rural area,
yes,
in a little community about 5,000, which the county seat is about 13 miles away, and they have about 80,000 people there. Because the community that I live in, we've integrated the schools, we had some very well for about 6 years. We never had a moment trouble. But jobs, the kids that's graduating school, they still are not accepted. You know, I mean, when they get jobs, why, you know, they'll get the runaround. Now, I'm a guy, I have four kids, and I graduated a girl as a nurse, and she's in public health, but, I mean, she can't get the job, you know, everybody else comes before her, and then I got another son that just graduated from school, and he's a sociologist, and jobs are very hard to get, and I got a daughter, I graduated in August, because she's got a job, but she couldn't get the job she wants, and education don't seem to be helping the Negro much. After all, he's getting a runaround.
Well, I'm sure that's true, sir, in too many places. I'd like, incidentally, to take off my hat to you and the rest of your family for doing this for your children and seeing to it that they did get what education was available.
I've been sick for 15 years, and I've never made more than $52 a week salary in my life, and that's been about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
All my kids won scholarships, and in fact, my son is the first Negro who was given a scholarship to a four-year white college in the state of Florida.
Well, good for him. I congratulate him, and mostly you for helping him do this now. But I think,
sir, we're not getting the bricks. We should get the kids.
Well, I'm sure that's true. That's true elsewhere. But I feel they are getting some jobs. And one of the troubles, sir, is the old patterns, the old attitudes do exist. And I must say that I'm not familiar with your particular area and your school area where you say you had no trouble and the school was integrated.
Yes.
Many of the rural area schools, though, lack quality. The quality of their diplomas is not up to that of some of the other areas, and this is sometimes a problem. I do not know that this applies to your particular problem.
Because we don't have many teachers. I mean, the teacher goes out, and then we don't have teachers because if they phase out of school, they'll put about 3 or 4 teachers.
That's what I had in mind. Now, let me tell you that here in Georgia, this is a shocking percentage, but about 46% of our high schools, most of them in the rural areas, do not offer a curriculum of higher high school mathematics, including some high school physics, for example, which would permit one of the students, one of their graduates, even to apply to enter their own state school of the Georgia Institute of Technology.
I don't understand. Well, we have that.
You've got this evil of segregation. What the white Southerner is finally beginning to realize is that the evil of segregation has penalized his children, not as much as the Negro children or the black children, but it certainly has penalized all the children of the South. To this day, the Southern teacher is paid less than the national average. To this day, there is less money spent per pupil in the South than in the national average. And to this day, there is less money spent on school plant than is spent on the national average.
Yes.
So that everybody's paying a penalty for this evil. I know you're proud of your children, and I hope that the fact that they are graduated and have these good degrees.
But no job.
Well, they have no job at all yet.
Well, the nurse have a job, but the other kids, I mean, they got to find jobs and. Well,
I think they'll find jobs, especially if they should want to enter teaching jobs.
Mr. Sendleterry,
to catch on with public health or with a teaching job or with one of the many clinics and so forth that are opening up to deal with people. I hope so, but I understand their predicament exactly. I've seen it in many other places, and I would have to say that I don't know if I'd call it a runaround, but you are up against a problem.
But let's
look at it. A few years ago, they couldn't have got those degrees.
That
isn't helping them now.
Well, that doesn't help the thing when the kid spends 12 years in high school and 4 years through college, and then you get out and you got a hard time, you got debt, you borrowed money, and you got...
That's right.
It's
an outrageous thing, and I just hope that public opinion will soon realize that it is.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll take our next call from Mr. Karras, who is listening to Night Call over WSBT in South Bend, Indiana. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello?
Hello?
Mr. McGill?
Yes.
Good evening.
Thank you.
I have a question for you here about race. What, in your opinion, can citizens throughout America do to help speed up integration so that it will take a better hold in America? Because this problem, I believe, as many Americans do, is very great.
Well, it certainly is a great and grave one. Of course, you have the separatist movement now by a great many of the more militant black persons who do not think that integration is the thing to do. Now, I don't think this is too disturbing. I think it's a sort of natural thing to feel a little bit inclined toward the separation now, but I think that there is pretty general agreement that you can't have decent, good education unless it is on an integrated basis. The Supreme Court was never more right than when they said in 1954 that a segregated education was discriminatory and inferior per se. Now,
Mr. Karras, we want to thank you for calling. We are sorry, but we have to break for station identification, and then we'll be returning.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Ralph McGill after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Ralph McGill about the South, race, and tomorrow. Again, Del Shields.
We'll accept our next call from a listener in Columbus, Ohio, who is listening to Night Call over WOSU-FM, Mr. Donald Payne. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. McGill. Good evening, Mr. McGill. How are you?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
Fine. I have a question, and I would like to ask, since the 1954 integration bill was passed, I noticed that the pattern for the school integration, also the social progress in the South, has been rather at a slow pace. And I'm wondering, can the white churches and social organizations in the South that have traditionally excluded Negroes in their memberships, can they bring about this change at a much faster rate?
Oh, I think so, sir. I think I was asked by an earlier caller about newspapers. I think, and again, I'm expressing personal opinions, I think that the failure of the church in this area has been perhaps the greatest failure of all. When you consider that, especially in the South, but perhaps especially there, but anywhere, public officials usually run for office by letting people know about their church affiliation, what it is, and their religious beliefs, and their commitment to Western civilization, which is based on the humanities and so forth. But I must say that certainly here in my area in the South, which I am pretty familiar, live nowhere else all my life, the failure of the church has been just dreadful. Many notable exceptions, or at least some, but I must say that even to this day, it's still true.
Mr. McGill, just recently the Southern Baptist Convention, which is one of the most influential church bodies in the South, has gone on record as declaring that they now have an open policy in terms of black membership in the churches and actually making a stand against discrimination and segregation. Do you view this as any significant move in the South for better relations?
Well, yes, I think it's significant in that it was said, but again, I'm not criticizing just the Baptists, they've all been responsible, but the Baptist church has no central authority, and each one of its churches is autonomous and can do as it pleases in this matter, and the convention can only recommend. For instance, Governor Maddox is a great Baptist, and Wallace is a church-going fellow, and so forth. But not many of the churches pay any attention to this, and some of them express great hostility. You have only to look at the facts which show that a great many of the young ministers in all churches the Roman and the various Protestant groups are leaving the church, that the seminaries are having trouble filling up their schools, and that the parish minister or priest today is a declining total, to know that something is very much wrong. And I don't see, of course, the Negro minister, he doesn't want his people to go over and leave him and go to a white church. And I think the problem is one simply of letting them know, these people know that they are welcome and that they are members. I know some churches here in Atlanta which have Negro members. This would, I don't know of any Baptist church that does, or Methodist. Again, I do know of some of the other churches which do, and I may have overlooked some. I said I just didn't know of any, but you get out into the rural South, and keep in mind that the South is still largely rural, even though much of its population has moved to the urban areas. There's still functional churches in the rural areas, and these are by a heavy majority still unwilling to commit themselves and join in this.
Mr. Payne, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and ironically enough, we were on the subject of religion, and we have a minister calling in right now from Nashville, Tennessee, Reverend Jasper, who's listening to Night Call over WVOL. Welcome to Night Call, Reverend.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask just two questions. Now, I was in a meeting last month with a Council on Human Relations in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm a former pastor there. And I asked this question. I continuously would hear, and I've been listening to your program, and I hear the same thing. And you're continuously saying a black and white man. Now, I want to know if that isn't the wrong pronunciation, discriminating the men, when we were taught that paper, tablecloths, or curtains, or such as that's white, and the other color, crayon, telephones, or such, etc., is black. Now, I have never seen, I discussed this in Little Rock, that I had never seen a black man or a white man. And for that reason, I had the first integrated church in Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would like to get your idea on this issue.
Well, I think, sir, this is simply a part of the modern semantics. It was just a few years ago that, or today even, I suppose, most colored people in America, or Negro colored persons, are called Negroes. But the younger Negro, and I think, and I understand this, and I rather think I agree with him, the truth is that for too many people, the black man was made a second-rate persona person, and black was associated with evil and ugliness and so forth. And so I think this sudden increased use of black substituting for Negro is simply an attempt to an identity and to say, well, look, I'm proud of being colored. I'm proud of being a black man. And
you Mr. McGill?
Hear them say black
Mr.
is beautiful.
McGill?
And of course, black is beautiful.
So Mr. McGill, I'm sorry, but our time has caught us kind of short. Reverend Jasper, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. McGill, we want to thank you so much for being with us tonight on Night Call, and we hope that the second century of publication for the Constitution will be as good as the first.
Thank you. I doubt if I last out the second one.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, sir.
Tonight marks the end of Night Call's fifth week on the air, and we'd like to know how you think we are doing, as well as any suggestions you might have for subjects and guests we should be planning for the future. Our address is Night Call, Pomona, New York's area code, or zip code, rather, 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York, zip 10970. And we'll give you that address once more after we tell you about next week's program, so we'd appreciate if you'd get a pencil. Next week, we're going to try and do something a little bit different. We're going to devote a whole week's programming to one subject. What are we doing in Vietnam? We're doing this because we think it's terribly important, as well as a complex subject, and one that may well decide the upcoming presidential election. On succeeding nights, we'll have five different experts expounding five different points of view. And if you listen to the full series, we hope you'll be able to gain the facts to make your own judgments on the subject. The Monday night, we'll start with the official position when our guest will be State Department Officer Stephen Lediger of the Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs. Now, he's a member of the Vietnam Working Group, which helps decide our official policy in that country. Now, Tuesday night, the Far East expert William Lederer, the co-author of The Ugly American, gives us his ideas on our own worst enemy, the title of his just-published new book, in which he says we're losing the war not to the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese, but to the South Vietnamese government and ourselves, which he says are our own worst enemy. On Wednesday night, a hawk's-eye view with Congressman Edward Hebert of the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Hebert is in a position to tell us, with no holds barred, what the military is thinking. Thursday night, Marine Lieutenant Colonel William Corson, who just retired from the service after 25 years, this past Sunday, in whose book The Betrayal was published, he'll be with us. And on Friday night, we'll wind up the week with an attempt at a balanced view with Fortune editor John Mecklen, his comments on the other four guests. And Mr. Mecklen has covered the war as a correspondent. So try and be with us all next week as we devote all five of our programs to a look at what are we doing in Vietnam? Our mail address again is Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. This is Del Shields in New York. Enjoy the weekend. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station, the first of five programs on What Are We Doing in Vietnam? Program one, the official position with Assistant Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, Stephen Lediger. Listen Monday night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.